Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're back for the next in our expectations series for this year. We're going to look at TJ Tampa and Isaiah Likely. Joining me to do that is Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. You know, just counting down the days and the weeks until the workouts start, regular season starts, and excited to talk about two young but pretty exciting players on this roster right now that I feel like could have pretty big impacts for the Ravens this year.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. One player, you know, we start with TJ Tampa as a player. We still need to find out who he is. And the first year did not do much to tell us that. And one of the big problems with rookies in particular that play either corner or wide receiver is they tend to accumulate soft tissue injuries in camp, and that keeps them out of the preseason. Tampa was out of the preseason, denied us our best chance to really get a good gauge on his play. That'll be a big deal in 25 to keep him healthy during the preseason. Yeah. Only had, what was it, 7 regular season coverage snaps in 2024.
Yeah, seven games and...
No, 7 snaps.
Well, he also played in 7 games. Okay, yeah, so 7 games, 7 snaps. I mean, I guess you get 1 snap per game on the coverage side of things, which, you know... You're right. It didn't tell us a lot. I think a lot of people are enamored with TJ Tampa. And I think you and I, Ken, I remember both of us on your draft stream last year identifying TJ Tampa as a guy that probably should have gone on day 2. In fact, should have gone on day 2. Yeah. But the Ravens able to snag him. And not that there were a lot of expectations for him last season because they had guys that they wanted to play over him and they had depth there. But I still think that it would have been nice to have him get a little bit more experience under his belt because, as we'll talk about a little later, I think a best case scenario for him could be he plays a lot more this season.
Yeah, he certainly could in case of injuries. I mean, the key thing for him is he's going to need to position himself on that totem pole. He has some legitimate competition. For starters, he has JAD. JAD is in his 4th season. He's in his 2nd. The Ravens are highly incented to give Tampa the first set of opportunities that come up because they have a stake in more of his future than they do with JAD. They also, he'll be in competition with Longer Beam and Kone, the two rookie 6th round picks. I would think one of them makes the team, possibly both, but probably one of them makes the team. JAD, I think, is really teetering on the very edge of the roster, likely to be cut at this point, but we'll see how that actually plays out. Happy with his special teams contributions in the games he played, but definitely want him to do more in terms of being on the field defensively.
Right. And I feel like there are a lot of different ways where TJ Tampa can't contribute. I think special teams is still going to be a pretty big calling card for him. And I think we probably will see some rotational things. And I think for him, the size and the length is really important. And I think the big thing with him is all these corners, and I think maybe people who watch the Ravens and think ball skills with corners are maybe a little scarred from Brandon Stevens and the lack of ball skills that he had. But TJ Tampa and a lot of these guys they've brought in, they have good ball skills. Yeah. Turn your head around for the football. Tampa exhibits that, and I think that's a very valuable skill set that a lot of people who watch this team, I think, now understand the value after watching Brandon Stevens struggle with that last season pretty consistently. So he brings a skill set to this team that I think is really important. And plus, you know, Ozzie Newsome's famous saying, you can never have enough corners. There's no guarantee that the guys in front of him get through the year healthy. Now, obviously, knock on wood, they do. You don't want to have injuries anywhere, but the nature of football is just, it's going to happen some places. So I think even if it's in spot duty or areas where he can flex that length and his size, there are opportunities for him to become a good player for them this season, even if it doesn't mean he's the star of their cornerback room, which I don't think anybody's expecting at this point.
Right. And to the degree I'd like him to be the star. I'd like him to be the star in terms of the guy who learns most quickly. You know, the guy who picks up on the playbook most quickly. That would be great. But if he's playing behind Awuzie and Humphrey and, you know, possibly some combination of Hamilton, Washington as well, coming down to the slot, and of course, Nate Wiggins. That's the expectation, and that's actually a good thing. I think he does represent the best of the Ravens' choices for special teams. Now, the Ravens have an enormous void to fill with all the linebackers who left this team. Sure. They had Board, Harrison, and Welch were all guys who played a ton of special team snaps, particularly on a combined basis. Last year, TJ Tampa only active for those seven games, but at 138 special team snaps, and it's layered across five different units. So you think of your really top special teams players are usually four unit players, but he's also on the field goal block unit, which is an extra one that only a few light players are on. Usually they're either working the edge or they're set back somehow off the line of scrimmage to be a tackler as they rotate off their initial positions. That's where Anthony Mitchell returned the kick for the touchdown against the Titans in the 2000 playoffs. But Tampa is a guy, I think, who fits the Ravens' need to have guys who play special teams and can also make an appropriate defensive contribution, where I think Bo Brady doesn't really meet that need because he doesn't play a position the Ravens need him to play. They don't need another dime back. They need another back end safety. Sanusi Kane is probably in a similar position. He's just maybe the better of the two of them as a special teams player.
Right. And they have a lot of those younger players that can replace those linebackers in the special teams group. What intrigues me about TJ Tampa is, you know, you mentioned that and he's going to be very active in that unit, but even defensively, you mentioned for that like spot snap or spot series here or there, particularly in the run game where he can use his physicality to his advantage, very strong downhill player and making an impact that way. Even if it's just on early downs, like he can still provide that presence. And look, the Ravens have a lot of those defenders anyway. I mean, Kyle Hamilton, Marlon Humphrey, those guys blow up run plays like it's nothing. So it's not like it's a skill set that they desperately need on the field, but I think it makes me feel more comfortable where if they do need another guy, if Humphrey or Hamilton has to miss a series or there's question about availability, having another player with that physicality to his game makes me feel a little better that, you know, it's a layered secondary. It's a layered cornerback room where I think the skill sets somewhat overlap in different ways. There are similarities and differences, but the way that Baltimore builds and constructs out this roster, which you could argue is the best in the Lamar Jackson era, or at least one of the best in the Lamar Jackson era, you have a lot of opportunities for TJ Tampa to help fill in certain spots when he's needed to.
Yeah, it's a very graduated secondary as well. You talk about the versatility is there, and they've got three of the most versatile players in the league. We've talked about that a number of times on the show, so I don't need to repeat it. What they really lack are back end skills, which they still, even though they have three guys and a lot of teams don't have three guys, one of them is Hamilton, whose greater value is closer to the line of scrimmage. Another one is Washington, whose greater value might be closer to the line of scrimmage as well. So I really believe they need another guy for the back end. And if they want to use a dime defense a fair amount, they really need five to make four to have somebody come in and fill that slot corner role, at least on an emergency basis. So any game where you go in needing four different safeties to play those four positions, you really want to have five guys active just in case your depth falls apart. It has many games and it's forced Hamilton off the line of scrimmage, which is exactly what the Ravens need to avoid. They need he's one of the most important players. Getting him set up is critical. Tampa, though, with regard to graduation as opposed to versatility, is a guy who we hope is not a big drop-off from, say, an Awuzie at the third cornerback spot to him at the fourth to either longer beam at Kone at the fifth, and then to whoever's left over among JAD or longer beam Kone with the bottom of the roster, if, in fact, that guy makes it.
And I think also with regards to Awuzie, I think someone who has a shot to revive his career and maybe become that guy in Cincinnati, or at least in a lesser role, get back to somewhat of that level. I think we also have to acknowledge that he has dealt with some injuries over the last handful of seasons. He's either had a pretty healthy year or it's been pretty bad, like last year in Tennessee, where he wasn't even able to make it through 10 games. So if Ouzier does have to miss time, then there are conversations about, okay, now Tampa's probably going to get some level of a bump. Yeah. And others as well. I don't think it's just going to be they hand the role over to one player and that's it. Baltimore obviously loves to rotate guys in and maximize that. But I think for a lot of people, it's almost like Ouzier is going to get that veteran opportunity. But if it doesn't work or if there's an injury, Tampa's probably next in line in some degree there.
All right. I my hope is that Ouzier is a third down corner where they move Humphrey to the slot. I can't see any damn reason why Wiggins is not playing every snap this year. I can't come up with any reason why he's not. And I definitely can't come up with any reason why Humphrey isn't playing every slot somewhere. So he'll probably either play SCB or be on the outside. And then when you're on third down, your first choice would probably be to have Ouzier come in at one of those spots, which is going to mean probably that Humphrey has to play that side where Ouzier comes in if the Ravens don't travel with their corners. So they don't chase receivers, you know, and by the way, that this is a year where they could do that because they've got very different stylistic corners. And Wiggins is a tremendously fast man who can stay on an island and it's not a problem. And then you've got other more physical cornerbacks. So if you want to get a matchup you want, the Ravens are well suited in terms of differentiation between those puzzle pieces to match up against the opposing receivers as opposed to the other way around. Right now, the Ravens for the last many years have basically given that choice, ceded that choice to the opposing offense, play their kind of their favorite shoulder players right or left all the time. And that creates some continuity. I understand why there's value there. I just wish that they didn't always have to give up the matchup exchange in the way they do.
Right. I don't think there's a skill set at wide receiver or, you know, skill position that they can't handle with what you mentioned in terms of how much different some of these skill sets are and how, you know, if there's a fast guy on the outside, Wiggins can handle that guy. And if you need someone more physical to play in the slot, you can put a Humphrey, you can put a Hamilton. And I think it's interesting because if Ouzier is your third down guy and you maybe want to make TJ Tampa your early down physical, are they going to run the ball? He can get downhill corner. You could hypothetically do that, maybe similar to what Baltimore might do with Latavius Robinson on the edge, where he's a physical guy, can help you on first and second down in the run game, and maybe as a pass rusher on third down too. But maybe you want to use Tavius on the inside a little bit more. You can rotate these guys in and out, which I think is exactly what they're going to do at the corner position. Honestly, all three layers of this defense have so much versatility, whether they want to play dime defense, whether they want to give heavier looks. It's just they have so many options. And so for a Tampa who gives you a lot in the physicality of his game, maybe he is a player that rotates with Ouzier as the year goes on, where Ouzier might get more opportunities at the beginning of the season, but then as the year goes on and Baltimore maybe wants to preserve some of his snaps, you get more situational with Ouzier and let TJ Tampa take over some of that. So when you get to late November, early December, hopefully January and February, there aren't as many miles on Ouzier and some of those vets.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting idea. Ouzier is a guy who played very well on a per snap basis last year at Tennessee, actually. And just the problem was he didn't get through the year, obviously. But but if you put a player like Tampa in there and you have him play more of the first down snaps, for instance, at corner, that's a potential solution to that we do not typically see from the Ravens. The Ravens, you know, they did some rotation with Trey White last year, for example, in for Stevens, and, you know, rotating effectively at corner in different ways that move Stevens around. When that happened, it was a full series at a time. And then when they would get to third down, Stevens would come in as a dime back and be back on the field. But White was typically in for a full season, a series at a time. I think it's why how players would like to have it. Players would like to say, well, let me have my chance in a broad variety of situations rather than being some sort of specialist that's going to, you know, brand me with a scarlet letter for future contracts. Let me do that. And we'll see how that works out.
I would just hope from a general perspective as well, there's just not as much turmoil in the secondary this year. And I don't think there will be, but I mean, it just felt like they were operating out of such necessity. And look, it worked. The changes that they ended up having to make did well for them, at least much more than it was early in the season. It was a drastic improvement, but you would just hope that with more stability and, you know, less uncertainty there, that more guys were able to settle in their roles. There are, you know, maybe less rotations and just more defined roles, where it felt like guys were having to move over and overcompensate for a lot of the struggles that, you know, especially early on in the year, that Marcus Williams and Eddie Jackson had. And that wasn't just in the safety department, that was the entire secondary. That trickled down to guys like Roquan Smith, who struggled early in the season.
Of course.
So yeah. I just hope that for everybody, Tampa included in this, obviously, but just from a general defensive perspective, we're not talking in week six about, man, this one player, like, oh, Uzi doesn't look anything like himself. Now they have to go and pivot to another option. I just hope there's less of that and more consistent roles and more consistent play.
Yeah, they've had certainly some fall off in play in each of the last two seasons. They were expecting to get something in 2023 out of Rock Ya-Sin. That didn't develop, but they did get something out of Ronald Darby, who was fantastic, completely out of context with the rest of his career for a single year. That, you know, I don't have any problem with like surprise upside like that, of course, but that what they really need to avoid is injuries. And last year is actually a pretty good year for not getting injured at corner. At safety, injuries weren't the problem. The problem was terrible play from the from the two veterans that they were really depending on before they finally had to cut bait on them and replace them entirely with Washington and Hamilton.
Right. It felt like it was their last resort, and the last resort worked. And, you know, Marcus Williams thankfully handled it well. Obviously, Eddie Jackson, not so much. But, you know, regardless, they were able to figure it out. But I do think that it took its toll early in the season, and guys were just so, I don't know if gassed is the word I want to use or tired is the word I want to use, but it just felt like Roquan, I think, was playing like five different roles on that defense early on because he was trying to overcompensate, and everyone was like, oh, he looks slow, which sure, he might've looked a tick slow at the beginning of the season, which is fair criticism. But I also think there was so much on his plate that when you got to after that Bengals game, after that players only meeting in the change, you saw Roquan get back to a level. You're like, okay, this is kind of what you expect out of a guy like Roquan Smith. So I think that guys like having TJ Tampa healthy and available, which is going to be key, will help if he can reach what we want him to. But obviously I think that for him starts on special teams, and then it probably trickles down to a probably per snap role on defense.
All right, let's talk about a good season and a great season for TJ Tampa. I'll just talk about this briefly. I set it at a 60th and 80th percentile, but I don't make any requests of the guest. Set it however you like, Kevin. What's a good season from your perspective for TJ Tampa?
Well, I would definitely say a good season is probably for TJ Tampa establishing some level of a role on defense, obviously a core special teams player that makes an impact there. And whether it is in rotation by series or by snap, whichever that would be, with Ajdobe Awuzie or just establishing himself, it is a guy that has a role but is not easily replaceable. What I mean by that is he provides value to your defense, and you're like, hey, we need TJ for this specific situation. So, I mean, if we want to put it in terms of stats, I mean, I would probably say anywhere from 20 to 40 tackles, pretty strong. That's a pretty big wide range, but still, I would say anywhere from, I don't know, 75 to 140 snaps for TJ Tampa on defense in rotation. Guys are staying healthy, but he's making an impact. You can sense his impact in the run game. Maybe he forces a turnover or two with his ball skills, and you feel pretty good about him as a depth piece that can step in, and you can play him in multiple situations there.
Okay. I mean, definitely some good things in there. Some things I might consider kind of above the line, because I think a lot of it is going to be, can he even break in? And my 60th percentile, there has to be a 40% chance he will do that. And I think he's actually faces fairly long odds to do some of those things. So I'm going to say the first thing I want him to do is remain healthy for the preseason, where I think we're going to get a substantial portion of his play in. And he's got to do that to just determine he's worthy of some play during the regular season. But it could still be a substantial portion of his total play occurs during the preseason. You might get 100 preseason snaps and not 100 regular season snaps, for example, despite the fact it's three games versus 17. I want him to be active on a weekly basis. Doesn't mean every single week, but pretty much every week, because they make him effectively into a core special teamer, and he's the fourth or fifth defensive back, whichever that fourth or fifth corner, I should say, that they want active on a weekly basis. I want him to get on the field through some confluence of circumstances as a backup, as a replacement. So obviously, it's not good if Humphrey or Awuzie or Wiggins is not available for some period of time, but through some combination of wanting him on the field and making an extra effort to getting him there, which that would be the really good kind, or getting on there because it's injury, I want him to get between 100 and 200 snaps, stay on the development curve. He's certainly behind that right now with 7 coverage snaps his first year, and more defensive snaps than that, but 7 coverage. And show a flash or two, something that leaves us wanting more in terms of playing time in 2026. And maybe even helps you figure out who's on your roster in that year with Awuzie departing and the possibility, I think, looming that Humphrey's going to move to safety. I'm acting like it's tomorrow or something. It's not, but that possibility exists. And when it does happen, you want to be ready at corner, and you're probably going to have another draft pick that year anyway, which will help mitigate some of that. But you want your backup totem pole has to be pretty strong. Your bench strength has to be pretty strong in order to move up a notch each.
Right. And I think that a big thing is showing that he can at least be a serviceable option when it comes to the future, because you're right. 7 coverage snaps last season, you would have hoped for a little more developmental rookie time, even if it was just in garbage time during Ravens blowout wins towards the end of the year or something along those lines, where I think he did miss out on that opportunity, him kind of being on and off the field really for the entire year, even dating back before the regular season. So I just think it was difficult for him to get into a rhythm. So I think your idea is behind the eight ball on that. So I think the number one thing is definitely health. Is it usually is with a lot of these guys, but especially for these younger players that are trying to establish a role at the NFL level.
Yeah, Amon Marshall and Dan Cody and players like that, they never got their chance because they were hurt during the preseason all the time. And they never got started. But there's plenty of players who fit in that. David Ajabo really fits in that same category now in the fourth year. JAD fits in that category now and entering his fourth year, even though he's played a little bit. He's way behind the developmental curve for where he should be. Let's move on. What's a great season for Tampa?
Well, I think, if everything goes perfectly for Tampa and his play is through the roof and off the charts, I think a great year for him, best case scenario, is probably surpassing Awuzie and on that depth chart. Obviously there's no shot he surpasses a Humphrey or a Wiggins. I'm not going to get that crazy because it's not realistic whatsoever, but I do think there's a realistic shot, and I don't know what percentage you want to put on that, but I think there is a shot that, look, if Awuzie comes in and he's not playing to the level they need him to, and can you mention some of the corners that have come in here like Rock Yassin a couple of years ago, and you're expecting something and it just goes the complete opposite way? Well, having a guy like Tampa, who maybe in this case plays 150 to 300 snaps and then can even maybe build on that. Now, obviously, you're not just going to get a set starting position in this Baltimore defense and play 100% of snaps if you're starting or in rotation. There's obviously going to be guys that come in for you who are going to play a specific role. But I think by the end of the season, in TJ Tampa's best case scenario, is he outplays Jadobe Awuzie, takes pretty firm hold of that, maybe notches a couple of interceptions, really establishes himself as a physical downhill player that can get after it in the run game on early downs. And I mean, best case, he's somewhat of a 2-3 down player consistently on this defense, and that is including Humphrey and Wiggins on the field. Now, that is best case for him, but again, the possibility that he surpasses Awuzie is not a non-zero chance, and I think that's probably his best path to playing time, at least more consistent playing time.
That's a great point. I mean, Awuzie, first of all, I think it's way more than a 20% chance that Awuzie fails to be a guy the Ravens could depend on. I think it's more like 35, 40% that Awuzie is a guy by the end of the year that they can't depend on. And it could be higher than that, including injury. It could be 45, 50%. I mean, he's definitely a gamble at his age coming in here, coming off a season with an injury. And then, with the risk of getting older at the position and the fact that, he's not the fastest guy anymore. Definitely a possibility that he drops the ball on the opportunity that he has. I think he will be handed it right at the start of the year, but I think he could easily not make the most out of that, because we just saw it happen with Rock Yassin. If we're looking at the other side of that equation, though, I'm much less optimistic that Tampa will necessarily be the guy that steps into a vacancy created by an Awuzie default of some sort. And that's where, you know, it could be Longerbeam, it could be Kone, it could even be JAD if he's still with the team after cuts are made. So, you know, he definitely has competition, but I think a great season. I don't think it's too far out of line, but it really might be more like a 86th percentile result, is that he's forced into a trial by fire and passes the test with results that are maybe above league average is what I would say, you know, a slightly plus or a significantly above the replacement level. How about that? How about if I say it that way? And then he's part of the planning for 2026 is, wow, we've got a guy who we think can play here. We don't need Iwuzier anymore because he's not going to be cheap in this next year. He doesn't have offset language. We're going to have to pay. Right. Tampa's clearly our number three cornerback going into 26. And then we have to worry about whether it's Longerbeam, a draft pick, whoever it might be.
And to dive even deeper into that, I mean, I think with Iwuzier, just him specifically, I think a big part of the reason why he came to Baltimore in the first place was the fact that Tennessee is still paying him and he wanted to do what was best for his career in terms of where's the best spot for me to revive my career. So I'm going to take a minimum, try to get one more big deal coming out of 2025. And if that can happen, obviously it doesn't necessarily bode as well for TJ in terms of his 2025 prospects. But then if we're talking about a good TJ Tampa season and a great Iwuzier season where you can come out of that feeling like TJ can replace Iwuzier, and then Iwuzier goes off and signs a deal that nets you a third or fourth round comp pick, third would be like, oh, this guy's a pro.
Be something.
I'm not sure we'd get exactly to that, but fourth or fifth, let's just say maybe even sixth. But any sort of compensation, and you feel good enough with what Tampa showed you alongside Iwuzier, I think that's best case for everybody in that scenario.
Now that obviously be very exciting. All right, let's move on. Talk about Isaiah Likely. That's what most people tuned in to hear, not the TJ Tampa talk. Likely a fourth-year tight end, turned, I think, 26 in April. Is that correct? I'll have to look that up to be sure about that.
That sounds right.
But, you know, the great story of the last 2 years has been Lamar and the tight end group as a whole. Over the last 2 years, they've had 143.5% aggregate passer rating throwing to the tight ends. And that included 30 touchdowns and one interception. You've probably heard that before on this show if you've been listening for any amount of time, because it's one of the stats that just jumps off the page at you in terms of what's there. I don't see it aggregated too often, but whenever I aggregate it, it jumps off the screen at me. But 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions for Likely last year was a significant part of it. And that group has done it with lower volume being a significant key. So in 2022, they had 195 total tight end targets, with Andrews having a huge year in terms of targets, a lot of them coming as a bailout target. And then they dropped to 110 and 138 in the first 2 years of the Monken era, which, you know, reduced targets. I've always been of the opinion that when you reduce your targets, you're probably going to get less marginal targets, as particularly from a high level receiver who's depended on for a lot of bailout throws. So your marginal targets are the ones that tend to go away. I think that's definitely true with Lamar Jackson, the way he's additionally spread the ball out on extended plays.
All right. And I think, to me, the big point that I like when talking about Isaiah Likely is we have seen improvement in his game. And while, again, that might not reflect in every single category, I think overall you see a player that coming in during his rookie season, I still remember his rookie year preseason when everyone was talking about, let's just bring up the run blocking for an example. Everyone was on, and it was true, he was not good in the run blocking department. He needed major improvement there. And I know everybody, it's super exciting to talk about him as a receiver, him and Lamar having the chemistry and stuff that you mentioned just there, Ken. But the thing that popped off the page for me is we have seen consistent improvement from him as a run blocker each year. And that's what excites me. Now, the receiver stuff is exciting in its own right, but obviously to play in this offense, I think it's important that, you know, for example, like whenever the Ravens would have Nick Boyle and Mark Andrews on the field, when Mark Andrews was younger, you would always know it was coming because they'd run to Boyle's side. Now Andrews has improved in that department, and obviously he's now more than serviceable there. I think Likely is more than serviceable now as a run blocker as well, which I think helps the ways you can line him up, whether it's in line, in wherever you want to put him. But I think that Likely, with his versatility there and as a receiver, makes him such an intriguing option. And honestly, he could be one of the big X factors for this offense in 2024. And I would expect probably a little bit of an increase in snaps, but it depends on how the Ravens want to do things. I think that's the biggest question, where I can't say it's going to increase or decrease, because obviously Andrews is still in Baltimore. Henry's still going to be a big focal point. You add DeAndre Hopkins, how big of an impact is that going to have? I don't know. But I do think that likely should be a huge part of this offense. Now, huge is relative compared to some people and what that word actually means. But man, I think with his abilities, his size, his skill set, especially even using him on screens, which I think could be really intriguing, at least more often this season, there are a lot of ways Baltimore could deploy him.
Yeah, there certainly are. I mean, he's a great yak receiver, which is nice, and we'll talk about that. I think the run blocking has had some, I would call it, sawtoothed improvements in terms of what's happened. But what I've liked about him is how effectively he takes care of a level two or level three target. It doesn't do much at the line of scrimmage. He's not really a great inline guy, and probably never will be. Just he's not size wise. He doesn't. Care. But when he gets into level two, he's been forklifting some players on a regular basis and does a really good job of keeping his feet, which I think the Ravens receivers have learned to do exceptionally well while they run block, and that's been a positive. If I'm going to his stuff as a receiver, I think it's a broad discussion, but there's an overlap in what's going on with Andrews that he won't escape until he gets his own number one job. I think there was legitimately enormous questions whether or not the Ravens would have both of them coming out of the draft. I think that they were still peddling them all the way to the end, and they weren't able to have their price met on either player. But I don't think there's any way that they're going to re-sign both of these guys after 25 or beyond 25.
No. And look, I honestly, if I'm Isaiah Likely, I might be feeling a type of way about Andrews returning in terms of this being a contract year for him. And if Andrews was dealt and Isaiah Likely got that job, he's probably looking at multi more million per year than he's probably going to get because of just the cancellation. Now, in terms of Baltimore's offense, I think it works great for them. Like, you can use those guys in a lot of different ways, but I do think that it puts a cap on both Andrews and Likely in terms of what contracts they're going to get. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Isaiah Likely was just kind of like, well, is he going to get dealt? Is he not going to get dealt? What's my role going to be? And now that it's pretty obvious Andrews is staying, and Likely is, you know, I don't want to say take a back seat, but there are going to be legitimate questions about like which one of these guys is going to come out on top. And what I mean by that is, where are the snaps going to come? Where are the targets going to come? Who's going to get more opportunities? Because if Likely gets five targets per game is a random number, five targets per game, and then Andrews is getting 7, 8, 9, 10. Well, some of those could have gone to Likely if Andrews wasn't there, and I think that improves his value. That doesn't mean that Likely can't make an impact with less targets. We've seen him and Andrews coexist together, and I think that will be good for them. But either way, whichever one they decide to re-sign, because I agree with you, Ken, there's no shot, in my opinion, both come back, they're probably going to be getting that guy at a bit of a discount, not for lack of talent, but people are going to look at the production. It's not going to be as big as it would be if one of them was gone.
If they have an option on the franchise tag for Likely that might be in the money at the end of the year. So they might really feel like that's a value for them to take. Tight end's not an expensive position for it. So that would be a legitimate question. In the case of targets, last year the Ravens only had 8 targets per game for the tight end group as a whole, all of them put together. So it's not like, you know, if the Ravens play well as
kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Okay, the likelihood the Ravens are as good as they were the last 2 years in 2025 is, I think, actually fairly low, because they were one of the best teams in the entire history of DVOA the last couple of years. I think the chance, even though their record might be every bit as good, I think that their likelihood that they're truly as dominant offensively and defensively is fairly low. If they are as dominant offensively and defensively as they were those tight ends, their targets aren't going to increase at all. That's what I would project anyway. I'd project probably a little more to wide receivers. I'd project maybe even a reduction to tight ends, more like, you know, the 100 and somewhere between 110 and 138 in terms of targets. I'd expect a little less 12 personnel if the Ravens want to run their ultimate possible fresh legs offense, which I think is what Monken wants. I think Monken wants to basically keep fresh legs on the field on a down by down basis as often as possible. The Ravens already, they do wholesale 4- and 5-man substitutions, probably as much as any team in the league right now. But then they you know, they picked up Hopkins. They've got LaJonte Wester is, I think, an excellent chance for doing that. They've got specialists like Wallace, who's a good run blocker that you don't mind having at the X on some downs, or at, you know, somewhere on the field, certainly on some downs. And then they have, you know, the multiplicity of the tight end group, you know, playing with 1, 2, or 3 on the field. They've got multiple running backs they can get on, even though they were pretty much a 2-running-back system last year. Sure. And not a 3. I think fresh legs is going to be one of the identities in this. And part of that understanding that comes with that is that every single skill position player gets to touch the ball less in total.
Yeah. It probably is what will happen. And that just comes with the territory. Even Charlie Kohler can help take off some of the stress. And if you want to run 2 tight ends, is it Andrews and Kohler, or is it Kohler and Likely instead of Andrews and Likely on the field at the same time? Those are more legitimate possibilities as the year goes on, and you want to keep those fresh legs. And I think it's interesting because with a player like Isaiah Likely, I mentioned the screens. I'm interested to see in the running back room. You know, do they get Derrick Henry more involved as a pass catcher this year? Do they get Keaton Mitchell involved more in that sense with him coming back and feeling good? Even the Justice Hill. I mean, it just felt like Justice Hill, he was Lamar's ultimate check down target. He felt like he was always in the right spot at the right time. And how do they divvy up those running back targets too? And does that mean that Isaiah Likely is not getting as big of a slice of the pie as maybe he anticipated if Andrews were to be out of the building? Again, I think overall it's good for Baltimore to have Andrews and Likely, but I think it's bad for Andrews and Likely to have Andrews and Likely together when it comes to their value. And maybe, look, I wouldn't be shocked if by the end of the season we're talking about Andrews and Likely as 2 top 10 tight ends in this league. Like, I just wouldn't, because Likely is, to me, he has that potential. Now,
Both be there right now, couldn't they, yeah, Kevin?
They could. I mean, tight end is a position where it's so top heavy. But then there's that fall off. And then, you know, at this point, like, is Dallas Goedert someone you trust over Isaiah Likely? Is, you know, we could go on and on about that conversation. But I think at this point, Likely is no worse than a top 12 tight end in the league right now. No worse than that. So in my opinion, these two guys, if they feel some type of way about not getting targets, you know, we talked for a while about this team, you know, where's the ball going to go? Where's the ball going to go? There's not enough to go around because the Ravens run it so much, especially in that Greg Roman system. Well, now it's kind of the same problem, but in a different sense, where they're throwing the ball everywhere. They have so many targets they can make an impact in a play for you. Where does Zay get less targets? Does Rashad Bateman get less targets? You know, they're going to have to factor in DeAndre Hopkins, and they didn't really lose anything in any department there. They gained. And I think that's another part of it, where if they, you know, if they had for some crazy reason traded Rashad Bateman away, then that's a different conversation about where do those targets go. But there's not any of those conversations. It's, you're already divvying up this pie in a lot of different small slices, and you didn't gain back any of the pie. You have to figure out where those targets are going.
The reason the pie might grow, in the metaphor you're using here, is because the Ravens aren't as dominant in terms of game script as they have been the last couple of years. Sure. So if they were playing a lot more close games, or they're trailing more in games, then it's very possible the Ravens end up passing the ball more. And if that happens, then, you know, maybe more people can be happy in terms of passing statistics and whatnot. I'll say any change from the current level of Ravens dominance is a bad thing. It's not a good thing for the team to not be a plus 157 point differential for the year like they were last year. It's the best single indicator we've got of how good is that team. They beat good teams. They're not a team that, like Buffalo, that feasted on the bottom feeders in the league. You know, the Ravens beat the good teams, and the Ravens, yeah, the last 2 years, as you know, we've talked about this show many times, had the 2 highest ever win totals against teams with winning records in the entire history of the NFL. So it's really something that the Ravens, they should jealously guard their winning formula for what it is. And I think that at the heart of that is that Lamar Jackson is at the center of the offense. And if everything needs to be centered around how does Lamar Jackson help you make a play? Does he make it with his legs? Does he make it with his feet? Does he extend the play and give you more receiving options that can be part of the whole thing? How does he create value for you that you maybe didn't expect? And you have a few set plays that are, you know, just to continue to show the misdirection in a meaningful way, like, you know, the jet tosses and the counter and whatnot. You show all of the elements that create some of the misdirection that Jackson then uses in order to read from the mesh point and to make decisions. But if wide receivers did not want to play with Lamar Jackson and wide receivers are not happy with what Lamar Jackson does in order of increasing their chance to win a ring. And yes, I'm saying that despite the playoff record, it's they probably would not want to play with him in general, because it's never going to be, nor should it ever be, a focused WR1 offense. It's just it would degrade what the Ravens have put together these last couple of years.
Yeah, and for like, if you want to throw DeAndre Hopkins in this conversation quickly, I mean, if I was DeAndre Hopkins and I didn't want to play with Lamar, if I didn't think Lamar's style of play was winning football, I wouldn't have come to Baltimore for the reason of, if I'm trying to, maybe Hopkins is trying to get one more deal after Baltimore. Maybe that's what he's trying to do. It almost would feel like, well, why would I want to go to a place where I don't feel like my talents would be utilized to the maximum potential? Whether it's, oh, this guy's going to get all these targets and I'm not going to get – it felt like when we were talking in the Greg Roman days about, oh, is Jarvis Landry going to come to Baltimore? Odell, that was – you know, everybody's talking about Julio Jones. Like, those guys were never going to come to Baltimore because those are guys that are trying to revive their careers, get one more deal. And they weren't going to come to an offense that, one, wouldn't throw the ball a ton anyway, and two, they weren't going to get a ton of targets, where it was a Marquise Brown-dominated offense, a Mark Andrews-dominated offense, where those would be the guys that would get 10 targets a game, and then everybody else would get one or two targets.
And you just mentioned Marquise Brown, but he complained and he got out.
Yeah, exactly.
He complained about being in this offense. And you don't have to go back that far. Go back to Deontay Johnson, what, about 8 games ago or something? He was last playing for the Ravens, and you know, is awful and complaining about the situation, sulking. And that, I mean, it's just, the Ravens don't need that. And I hope that the current guys take a cue from what's going on in terms of what's really important here. And if you're Rashad Bateman or you're Flowers, you got a couple of years left in Baltimore. If you're Flowers, you get 3. If you're Bateman, you have 2. And just say, you know, make the best of the current situation as is right now, and the money will follow in whatever way it was with another organization. But with that, with great money comes much less in the way of interesting winning and postseason football. Wherever they go, it's very unlikely to have the kind of impact on winning in the postseason that they had with the Ravens. So I hope that they you know, see the value in that. Any of them, likely, obviously, is right in that group doing that. I think Andrews is fine in that category. Andrews is in a point in his career where he's not in that much demand that he really has other options. But you know, I think, you know, Odell was a good example of a player who was like, you know, this, look at the offense. They didn't really throw the ball that much in Aguilar. Of course, I didn't get a lot of yards. And yeah, whatever. I'm not going back to, you know, over-unders on yardage, but it is a fool's errand, an absolute fool's errand to take the over on a Ravens wide receiver yardage on the season. All right?
It's true. And I mean, I remember, you know, Zay has been vocal on social media at times, but, you know, and that to me is more about passion than anything. Like, Zay just wants to win, and there have been some moments for Zay with that. But I mean, Marquise Brown complaining and saying, you know, why do you have soldiers when you never use them? And like that whole situation, like, it doesn't feel like any of the guys on this roster are like that. Now, again, we don't know. And I think this is a unique situation because you do have an entire tight end room that is playing for new contracts. And so obviously in that situation, everybody's going to want the ball because everybody wants that production. And it's just the way things go, where you can look at a guy with talent, like, let's just say Mark Andrews, and you can say, well, started off the year kind of sluggish last year, had the moments in Buffalo that weren't great, and then maybe he turns around. There's not enough of the ball that's getting thrown his way, and all of a sudden the production looks really down compared to what – and even last year, like, he still had a great touchdown season. It was just that, well, what if he goes from, what was it, 11 for him last season to 5 or 6? And people, oh, well, that's a decline. We're not going to pay you because the production wasn't there. And it could be the same conversation with Likely, who's an up-and-coming ascending player. And – a year for him, and we'll get into the good and great stuff a little later, but it's just like, if he has like a subpar year production wise, but he still has the athletic tools, the traits, he improves, some teams might look at that and say, well, you don't really, where's the production? You haven't really, you know, done enough for us. And that might cut into what he gets. So it's such a perplexing situation, because I don't know what it's going to look like as the year goes on, because there could be like a time 2.5 months into the season where it's been the same consistent thing for one of those guys. And they say, man, I need the ball because this is my livelihood. I need to make money here, and this is my livelihood. I want to get a big deal. Or it could just be everybody getting along. Hey, we're trying to win a Super Bowl. I think that's the option. I think we will get option two, but you just never know in this day and age.
Yeah, and it could still be festering below the surface. Marquise Brown was actually relatively quiet about it as a player, and the Soldier's comment is a relatively minor speed bump in what was a pretty nice flat road for him. And in fact, he apparently asked for the trade a year before he got it. So, you know, there's that. And then they kept the trade quiet, despite the fact that he went to Arizona that day. The trade had been made before the draft. I mean, that whole thing, and Lamar's WTF response to that. Obviously, Brown hadn't told Lamar that this deal had been made, and probably was told by the Ravens. So they kept it. They did a good job of keeping quiet. Ravens have done a really good.
I remember as well, you know, like a guy like Hayden Hurst, who knew he was going to be in Mark Andrews' shadow, and he kind of got out of that before. And obviously it didn't really pan out for Hayden, unfortunately, but he said, look, I know it's going to be Mark's team here, and I want a chance to shine myself. And that's when he requested out, got the trade to Atlanta. So I'm not saying Likely's requesting a trade right now, but it's just, there have been instances with this team where there just hasn't been enough ball to go around for different reasons, but it just becomes a situation of these guys want to figure out what's best for their career. And obviously winning is a big part of that for a lot of these, Likely included, by the way. I think Likely is a super competitive person. He wants to win, do what he can to help the team, but I just don't know what we're looking at contractually, because your entire tight end room doesn't have a deal beyond this season.
This is a very difficult financial argument to make, by the way. And being almost 62 years old myself, I can tell you, there are thresholds of lifetime earnings where it matters. And then I think there's thresholds above that where I'm working on like a point scale, I would put it. So I'd say, you know, how much does it matter to have a net worth of 1 million? It matters. How much does it matter to have a net worth of 3 million as opposed to 1 million? That's a different retirement proposition. You end up in a different retirement home. I understand. I understand why that difference matters. Where I'm having more trouble, and I think a lot of people get to this point in their lives at some point, is why it would matter between, say, 30 and 70 million in terms of earnings lifetime or net worth, if that's where it ends up for some of these guys. I think that sort of number, that sort of differentiation, I hope it's the nature of agency and whatnot, and literally the people who are representing these players who I'm talking about, that they need the highest possible dollars in order to run their own businesses and whatnot. I'm not sure why it matters that much to the player. I think at some point you got to say, well, I really love playing in Baltimore. And I think Ronnie Stanley did that this year, played for less money than he otherwise could have. But I think that there maybe it should be even more. And some of that's baked into the whole Likely thing about, you know, does he really have an opportunity to make the same money in Baltimore that he would make playing not with Lamar, where he's, you know, more of a number one tight end option and a number two overall, maybe receiving option on some lesser team, we'll call it.
Right. And again, I don't blame any player for wanting whatever they want with their career, whether it's money, Super Bowl wins, personal stats, whatever it may be. That is every player's prerogative to do what they want and value what they want with their career. But obviously, it will reflect probably on the teams you play on and kind of how much you win and how much you don't, which again, if you value money, that's completely okay with me. Like, go ahead and get your money. But for a team like Baltimore, where they don't want to necessarily overpay guys or pay above a certain value or pay multiple guys at certain positions, and they've made tough decisions, you know, you can't keep everybody. I think that they should keep Likely over Andrews, but I just think it's probably going to be, unfortunately for Likely, at a lesser dollar amount than it would be if Andrews was off the team. And there's so much for him in terms of his skill set and his ability and the way that he can be deployed and be on the field, where if he was a number one and it was lightless, if it was Likely and Kohler and some mid-round draft pick from this draft class, like Likely would be dominating that target share in terms of the position, the tight end position. But I just don't know how it's going to shake out, because by the end of the year, it could be Likely over Andrews. If some crazy thing happens and all of a sudden Likely is your number one and Andrews is the one that's unhappy. So it just depends on what happens.
I'm not sure how crazy that would be. And I Mark would obviously be unhappy entering a contract year with a down year. You wouldn't want that, but you know, it's Likely he's playing for his first big bite in the apple this time around. So I, and by the way, with all the money stuff, I completely understand and I completely respect whatever choices players want to make. I hope that players are making that decision for themselves instead of for their agents. You don't have to feed the guy who earns 3 or 5% of your contract with the most possible dollars at the cost to your own personal situation. And that's where I'm really making the point. And you know, it is what it is.
And you have situations like a Geno Stone, who, you know, the Ravens were, I don't know what they were going to pay him. I don't even know if they offered him a deal. It doesn't really seem like it based off of Geno's social media posts, but you know, Cincinnati giving him the deal that, you know, he felt was best for him. He goes there and then obviously has a pretty bad year for them last season. Right. He has to take a pay cut this year to even stay on the roster. And it just kind of shapes a little bit of your career at that point, because it was his first big deal. Obviously Baltimore, it never felt like Patrick Queen was coming back either. He takes the deal with Pittsburgh and has a pretty underwhelming, he had moments, but pretty underwhelming first year there. And I don't know what his future is in Pittsburgh beyond this season. Whereas, you know, for some other guys who stuck around in Baltimore on lesser contracts, you know, and there are plenty of guys who are in that situation and who we could talk about over the years. Obviously, you know, if you want to go back to like a Tavon Young or Nick Boyle, guys who signed for those like team friendly, but still bump up in pay. Those are guys that you kind of saw the consistent play and the stability over a guy leaving for another opportunity. And, you know, we could go on forever about guys who left Baltimore for much bigger deals and really never panned out elsewhere. So again, it depends on what you want, depends on that, but I agree, do it for yourself and not for anybody else. That's the big thing.
Let me go through a couple statistics for Likely from last year. Give us a basis for making our good and great stuff. Caught 9 of 12 balls in that opening game against Kansas City for 111 yards. One TD in the opener on a 49-yard catch and run. Andrews was limited in that game. Car accident, remember, just bringing some memories back that are bad. But he's also very heavily defended by the Chiefs. And we saw some things in camp that would have led to us to believe that Travis Kelce was going to be a big focus of that first game. And I wouldn't be surprised if that same thing was going on in Kansas City to make Mark Andrews a big part of the game plan. Then he only exceeded 5 targets once in the remaining 15 games he played. So he did not really get the ball much. Obviously the first game ended poorly with him coming down a toe outside the end zone. He did reduce his drops on the season from 10.5 to 2.3%. That was very good, just one drop. But he took a step back on contested catches. 23 was a great contested catch here, where he made all 5 of his, just 1 out of 4 in 2025, which was unfortunate. The 6.2 yak per reception, this is becoming now one of the Likely characteristics. So in 23, he had a great yak year where he was 3rd among all tight ends. In 24, he was 5th at 6.2 yak per reception. And just as a comparison, Travis Kelce's at 3.5 yards, Mark Andrews at 3.6 yards, David Njoku's at 4.0 yards, and he's at 6.2, and he was, at 7.1 or 7.3 the year before. But it's now a known characteristic of Isaiah Likely that I think will fit into his next contract extensions. And the other thing, if he plays with a mobile quarterback again, which might make a lot of sense, is the extended play chemistry he had with Lamar continues to be outstanding. And we saw, you know, some of the really big plays he made in 2024, Lamar made. like the Cincinnati play where he runs over the sideline, throws Sam Hubbard to the ground. You know, Hendrickson is gasping for air on the sideline after the play, shaking his head. And Lamar still has the energy to low-five the official who was working that sideline after he throws a touchdown to Likely. Just some beautiful stuff. That extended play chemistry has been remarkable. It's really worked in his favor. So he's either got to recreate that with his next team or accept that his role as a receiver is going to somehow be different in terms of how he relates to the quarterback he has.
Yeah, that one in Jacksonville in 2023 in prime time was also where Lamar escapes. I think it was the who was it? The
left sideline.
Yeah, yep. That ends up, he gets it. And, you know, so is that, how do you catch that? I mean, as a contested catch player, like you talked about, like the improvement has been there. Lamar clearly has the trust. And obviously, you know, Lamar and Mark have been playing street ball for years. Like those two just know everything about one another, where they're going to be. And while Likely, I don't think is nearly close to that level right now, I think that chemistry has been building. And I think the thing that encourages me is, you know, you mentioned the Chiefs game where Andrews was heavily defended and Likely kind of ate in that game. Well, we saw both his rookie season and his second year, as we've mentioned, where it's like Andrews goes down for a bit of time and Likely steps in pretty seamlessly into that tight end one role. And that chemistry kind of just picked up from there. I think, well, was it the Tampa game is rookie season, the New Orleans game is rookie season, both those games being in prime time, he stepped up and he contributed in both of those scenarios, in both of those situations. So to me, I think that the ability for him to essentially have two tight end ones on your roster that you can use, I don't want to say interchangeably, but both in a lot of different ways, gives you so much value and so much impact. Plus, again, if they want to use him in the flat or as a screen guy or whatever for that yak ability, which we've talked about and Ken, you've mentioned a bunch here, I think that there are so many ways you can deploy him, whether you want to put him in line, whether you want to put him out in the slot. You know, I still remember the Atlanta game. I think that Atlanta game was in 2022 where Mark Andrews was placed out wide. He burned AJ Terrell. Do you want to try Likely out wide? Like, you can try so many different things with him. I'm just curious about how many snaps he gets per game. And again, where the target share comes in.
All right, so let's go to a good season and a great season for Isaiah Likely. Start us off with what a good season is from your perspective.
I would probably say a good season is he splits time with Andrews. And again, I think split is kind of an interesting word to use because we don't know what that's going to look like. You mentioned the fresh legs offense, Ken, which does that mean he's sharing the field with Andrews or not? But I would probably say he stays healthy for the majority, maybe misses one or two games in that span. A continued uptick, both maybe a small uptick in targets, you know, a ability for him to continue to grow his value while obviously not conceding too much to Mark Andrews there. Run blocking improvement again, just continuing that. And maybe, you know, while we've said he's not necessarily going to be the most hulking inline presence ever, can he just continue to ascend in there? I would probably say a little bit more use as a screen guy. I love him in that role, and I think that they can use him, whether it's on bubble screens or whatever you want to put there. If I had to give a number, I would probably say anywhere from 45 to 60 catches. Maybe you get him at 500 to 550 yards and 3 to 4 touchdowns. That's probably a good year for me for Isaiah Likely.
Okay, let's see, what do I have? Yeah, about 49 targets or 49 catches is what I would have. You put it slightly differently than me. But I'd say his run blocking improves slightly. I think somewhere between the 22 and 24 level would be good. And he's able to get approximately 4 targets per game. Catch percentage, I'd like to see over 70%. I think Lamar is typically feeding him the football in a way that leads to that. Not all targets are created equal, but he's definitely had some good targets. Continues with solid yak. It doesn't even have to be at the same level because I think it's basically not sustainable for him to be 6.2 every year or better and be in the 88th percentile or thereabouts, where he's been relative to other tight ends. But if he's 70th, 75th percentile, that'd be cool. I want him to be known as a yak receiver. I'd say his yards per target might take a small step back with fewer big plays. I'd say something like 8.0 might be reasonable. If he's using a screen game, it'll drop. It'll drop pretty substantially, honestly, because that's really more like an extension of the run game. I'm not in favor of that, by the way. I think the Ravens do better getting their tight ends between level two and level three and using a player like Wester, even Flowers, but really Wester, I'm hoping is going to be the primary this year as being their gadget guy. Could be Keaton Mitchell too. They've got multiple guys who can take on that role. Justice Hill. They don't need to be, you know, short arming the ball to out quicklying the ball to one of their guys who's really dangerous down the field. And since most plays are extended anyway, the danger he creates by being a vertical receiver or a guy who can get free between level two and level three is greater than it would be with other quarterbacks. So I don't like giving that up. Anyway, I think Monken will find a way to use both of his top tight ends with a combination of 12 personnel and some rest. And that's the fresh legs I'm talking about. And the Ravens passing game is still not going to generate massive numbers for him. I'd say he gets about 560 yards in the scenario I've presented here for a good season. I think there's going to be people say, oh, we can't really think that's good. Well, yeah, I mean, I can actually think that's good because it probably means the Ravens are winning a lot of games in a lopsided manner again. And that honestly is, to my way, easily a 60th percentile result.
Yeah. And I actually am really intrigued about Keaton Mitchell this season and what they can do with him, whether, you know, they use him as their gadget guy or I think a Wester, which is really, you know, he's kind of a wild card for me, but I think for a guy like Likely, and even if he demands so much respect from defenses, whereas a vertical guy, you have to bring that help over the top because you can't trust those other defenders in one-on-one situations. And, you know, he's going to jump over a linebacker or a smaller defender and catch a ball. And you have to bring that safety help to really stifle him. Well, then that leaves other one-on-one opportunities for a Flowers or a Bateman or an Andrews or whoever else is on the field there, which I think is really important. So, you know, some of the things that Andrews did, again, like, for example, when he was struggling by being defended with a ton of bodies against the Chiefs, is he drew those bodies, which opened up other opportunities for Likely. If Likely can be that player who draws a lot of bodies, it will not affect anything from his box score stats, but it certainly will show that he is having major impact in the offense because other guys then get involved and eat because Likely is demanding all that attention.
All right, let's move forward on a great season here. What would that look like for Isaiah Likely?
Yeah, I think a great season would be, as we kind of have mentioned here and there on this show, Likely surpassing Andrews completely and being the number one tight end, which obviously would mean more snap share, more target share, more statistical growth from Isaiah Likely there. Now, again, what that would do for Andrews, you know, I don't really know how that dynamic would be, but continuing to improve, like this would be substantial improvement as a run blocker and him being able to demand that attention. I would probably say you get him anywhere from like 70 to 90 targets in that, which would be good. So probably maybe anywhere from 60 to 70-ish catches on the year, maybe like, I don't know, 600 to 800 receiving yards, depending, and 6 to 7 touchdowns. I think to me, making the necessary adjustments to be a well-rounded player that I think the Ravens would feel comfortable signing to a bigger contract or even just, you know, for his sake, competition around the league to drive his price up because everybody would love to have a number one tight end. And I think it's rare that anyone worthy hits the market. I think it's, you know, it's rarer at other positions, but tight end is one of those where it just feels like there are so few and far in between tight end ones and the Ravens have two of them. So to me, I feel like also being able to, you know, even getting a little crazy, established himself as one of Lamar's most trusted targets, if not Lamar's most trusted target overall. Now, how realistic is that? I'm not really sure because obviously the Andrews connection is there. He and Bateman have been, you know, establishing chemistry, but Likely has been too. So, I mean, I think to me, the big thing for a great year would be by the end of the season, we're talking about Isaiah Likely as Baltimore's number one tight end with Andrews pretty clearly behind him.
Okay. Well, one of the ways he gets behind certainly is by getting hurt. So I hope that's not the reason.
Sure.
I'm just going to read mine directly because we got to wrap this up. Takes another leap as a receiver with much more trust / connection with Lamar. Far more central to scheme as the weapon too free via manipulation of safeties or play action. So not that he's the one creating the freedom for other players, but that he's the one being freed between level two and level three by what's happening with Flowers or Bateman or even Andrews or Henry, the mesh point, whatever it might be. Provides more extended play chemistry, has a big uptick in targets due to one, missed time from Andrews, two, poor or absent wide receiver play. I think that's actually less likely now. And three, the Ravens trailing in more games, which leads to a bigger season by aggregate numbers. And I'm thinking about 85 targets, 8.0 yards per target, and about 680 yards. The more targets he has, the lower his YPT should go, but I still think he can maintain 8.0 on 85 targets. And, you know, again, absent any big in-season numbers, it's a great year if he makes the postseason and makes noise there, and also if he's signed long-term. If the Ravens decide he's the guy, it's probably because of something he's doing. Might happen still before the season, by the way, because the Ravens need to figure some things out about 26. And one of the big leftover problems is going to be, how do they deal with all of the skill position exodus that occurs after the 25 season?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is him establishing his value, not only for the Ravens, but across the league. You know, if by the end of the year, the league sees his value, and, you know, whether that results in a bidding war for his services or just more respect around the league, and, you know, Baltimore can re-sign him and gets a big contract, I mean, he shows his impact on the field, and he'll certainly be rewarded with a big deal.
All right. Well, great talking football with you, Kevin. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me over at Locked On Ravens. We are a 5-day a week daily Ravens show. So we're on YouTube. You want to hit the like and subscribe button over there. You're certainly more than welcome. We're also in audio form anywhere you get your podcasts. I do some writing over at the Ravens Wire for USA Today. I do some work over at Bleacher Report. And yeah, just, you know, I'm waiting for the regular season to come one day at a time. So appreciate you having me on, Ken.
All right. Excited as always for what's going on during the regular season. And really excited to start this particular series, which is going to be 30 shows in total. But I also want to do some shorts that are intermingled with these. So if you have an idea, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
Let's appreciate you, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.